Don Durrett, welcome back to Investing Experts. It's great to have you back on the show. It's great to have you back talking gold and silver and miners. Just to refresh the audiences and listeners and investors' memories, you have your investing group on Seeking Alpha. It's called Gold and Silver Mining Ideas, appropriately, I would say. Last time you were on, talking just that, gold and silver miners, how you approach the space, how you approach the sector, how you're thinking about specific names. You want to catch us up on how you're thinking about things mid-April 2024 as you look at the precious metal sector?
Yeah, we can start there. So I was, when gold first made this initial move, let me back up even further than that. So we've been in a 3.5 year correction with gold, silver, and the miners, going back to August of 2020. And so we've had a lot of ups and downs, if you will, a lot of false breakouts in both gold and silver. And overall, the sentiment in the miners has been really weak because of these up and down. You know, the investors are tired of it. You know, if you buy a rally, then you get beat up. It's like catching one falling knife after another. You know, it's been really, really bad as far as sentiment goes in miners. And I've been waiting for kind of the ducks to align to get out of this 3.5 year correction. And it looks like they are all starting to line up here over the last 3 weeks. It actually started right around March 18th, March 20th, like, you know, going into the last week of the month of March, gold started going up. And then in April, it broke out. I mean, it went from 2,100 to 2,300, which was a significant breakout. 2,100 was a resistance level. So you basically had a nominal all-time high in gold. Then, you know, then you had some additional check boxes, I mean, to get out of this hole, this 3.5 year hole, which is you need silver to come along, which has happened now. We have silver at $28 as we speak, and the breakout was really about 27. So their gold and silver are both significantly above their breakout levels. Although I think 28 is really kind of a really important breakout level, probably more important than 27. It is more important than 27, but
why would you say that? Why is it more important?
Because if you look at the technical chart for 28 silver, there's a lot of touches, if you will. And so once you get above 28, you're pretty much, I think, gonna run to 35. Whereas 27 was a technical breakout on the monthly. So a lot of the TA guys think 27's it, we're good. We don't need to go to 28. You don't have to worry about 28. We're already there. But me, I'm still a little worried about 28 because of all the touches there and the resistance. And sure enough, I mean, we went up and touched 28 and we haven't been able to bust through it, which is to my point. But I do think that gold is leading here. So gold, I mean, it just went through that 2,100 straight up to 2,300. I mean, that's a $250 breakout. So I think that we're past the finish line here. I think we're going to get there. I can see the finish line, you know, but that said, I think that we're still kind of going uphill still. We're not going downhill yet. So what I mean by going uphill is that you still need a couple other players. So we got gold and silver. Those check boxes are there. But we have two other players that are really important that aren't playing yet. One is the miners. So the HUI, which I use to follow the miners to determine if the miners are breaking out. The miners haven't. The miners, they're not performing that well versus the price of gold. And that's because of this bad sentiment that's lasted for 3.5 years. And people would think, well, it's just another one of these, you know, I'm just going to catch another falling knife. So nobody really wants to jump in. Plus, you have a risk on trade on Wall Street, and Wall Street is not ready yet to buy the miners. And so we need the HUI to get that, the HUI to get above, say, 275 before we even kind of get a kind of a, you know, a whiff of a breakout. And then we really need to get above like 325. So the cycle high in the HUI is 360. We're 100 points below it, or 95 points below it, and gold's at 2,300. So it's pretty amazing how underperformed the miners are here. So we got that going on. And then the biggest checkbox, which I think is the most important one of all, is the risk on trade on Wall Street. We need that to flip to risk off. And when it flips to risk off, that's when more money will go into gold, more money will go into the miners. So that's why that we're still climbing that hill. We're going to get there. We're getting close, but we're still climbing. And so once the selling begins on Wall Street, we were down 1% today on Wall Street. And I thought 5,200 was going to be the top. We never got to 53. We almost got there and the S&P. And I just think that we're really close to a top on the market. And then once we roll over, I think the fear level is really going to take off, and you're going to get that risk off trade on Wall Street. And that's when we start going downhill, and that's when the miners take off.
Do you have a sense of timing on that, or a general sense of timing on that?
Yeah. So I'm an oddball. I'm a metaphysical writer, which is really weird for gold. Gold people are usually very conservative. And I'm not that way at all. I've been a metaphysical writer since 1989. I've written a lot of books. So I do a lot of research in that area. So I study the future, if you will, which very few people do. And I study the future from a lot of esoteric angles, if you will. But I also study history, and I study politics, I study economics, and I basically bring it all together. So if I look at economic history since 1945, there is so much going against the U.S. economy right now. I mean, it's such a house of cards. I recently did a podcast with Chris Marcus, and I mentioned nine basically triggers that the U.S. that could basically, you know, take us into a recession, if you will. I call them traps, nine traps that the U.S. economy is in right now. It's just everything is basically just coming to a head. So my point is that it's going to happen this year. I'm very, very pessimistic for the U.S. economy this year. I just think that everything is just finally aligned against us. And it all comes down to one thing. And this is what people really can't wrap their head around, because they have this normalcy bias. And that one thing is basically the U.S. Treasury market breaking down, where they can't borrow what they need to borrow. We're going to hit that this year. So have this idea of what's called fiscal dominance, where the government is basically forced into having these large budget deficits because they're forced to print a lot of money, which that's what's happening today. So we have about a $1.5 trillion deficit, and it's not going down because they can't. If they cut spending and they can't raise taxes, it's very difficult to raise taxes in this environment. And so, and they can't cut spending either. So they just have to keep spending more and more and more. And that's called creating pressure on the bond market, because foreigners, now you have a high dollar days are 105. So the foreigners cannot afford to buy our bonds. So the auctions are basically going to blow up this year. And that is the paradigm shift. So what's going to happen is just going to be bad news after bad news this year. And it's kind of a doom loop for the U.S. economy, but we're not going to crash. But what's going to happen is we're going to hit a wall. And when we hit a wall, that's when you're going to get that risk off trade. It's just not going to grow, because they're not going to be able to print and create the liquidity that they need to. So you're going to get a banking crisis. A lot of the small banks and mid-sized banks are going to go under. It's just going to be ugly, ugly, ugly. We're going to go into recession. So going to happen is the selling on Wall Street is going to begin possibly in April. But if not April, then I would say May or June. But in the next 3 months, I believe that the selling will begin on Wall Street. Now, I don't think it's going to be a crash. I think it's going to be a steady downward falling, where Wall Street continues to believe that the Fed's going to come to the rescue by cutting rates. And so that belief will keep the market kind of buoyed up, if you will. People will hang around. Nobody's really going to, because the thing that really forces a big crash is a crash, right? So you go down 5% and then it goes down 10%. But that's not going to happen. Like today, we're down 1%. I think these sell-offs are going to be, you know, 1% to 2%. I don't think we're going to get very many 3% down days. But it, over time, though, it's going to be nasty, because once you get down below, say, you know, below 40, I hate to throw numbers out here, but, you know, somewhere below 4,800, I think people are really going to get really nervous. And then it's going to be really difficult to turn it around, if you will. So below 5,000 is going to be a red flag. Below 4,800, basically the red flags just get bigger and bigger as we go down.
What does this mean portfolio-wise, given how negative you think the economy is going to be? Are there specific names that you're getting into? Do you feel like this just is a positive for gold and silver, probably? How are you thinking about it in terms of, you know, investing and portfolio-wise?
Well, first thing I want to say is that Americans, tens of millions of Americans have 401k plans, and the majority of them have exposure to the stock market because the stock market has done extremely well since 2009. So you have to be an idiot not to be in the stock market. And I don't think people have gotten out. I think the majority are still in the stock market. So right there, those people are positioned for tragedy. They're going to lose, you know, 20% or more, I think, in their portfolios, if I'm right. And again, everybody's guessing about the future. But if I'm right, I think that it's going to be ugly. So you think about how many people have 401k plans. It's a lot of people. And then people, their houses. So I think that, you know, people, their wealth effects. So they have their money in 401k plans. They have the value wealth in their house. So I think housing is going to go down 20% and stocks are going to go down 20%. So that's nasty. I think that's what's coming over the next 12 to 18 months. I have all these portfolios in my investing group, some of these portfolios, but my portfolios are all up. You know, they talk about last year, the stock market was up, you know, 10 or 20%. And so my model portfolio is just gold and silver miners. And, you know, it's up 30% since I started this. My Mormons is up 58%.
Why is it called Mormons?
So, yeah, so this is great. So a friend of mine, he likes to invest in lottery picks, really high alpha, high risk stocks. And he overweights them. And I basically told him, because the stock market was basically, this is when the stock market was down, the HUI was like down below 220. And I told him, I said, no, you need to buy these quality producers that have all this leverage. I mean, they're all basically, you know, unbelievable leverage. You don't need to take all this risk. And instead of marrying these ugly stocks, you need to marry the pretty ones. So he told his wife he was going to marry the Mormons. So he named these quality stocks, the Mormons. And so when I told everybody, I said, buy the Mormons to the bottom. It's the best play out there. They're up 58%. So the Mormons is these quality silver producers. So I can tell you them right now. The first one is Coeur Mining. You know, it was trading almost $2 and it went all the way to, I think, $4 now. And then Endeavor Silver was another one. I got down under $2 and I basically just said, just buy this thing to the bottom. And it went all the way down like $1.50, I think. And now it's up to, you know, well up. And then First Majestic, Fresnillo. Fresnillo is one of the ones that hasn't moved yet. And then Hecla, Hochschild Mining, Pan American Silver, and Silvercrest. So those are the eight Mormons. And I basically said, you know, you want to buy this to the bottom now. And then I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 8 portfolios in my investment. So I have a 20 bagger list. That one's up 54% too. My producer is only up 22%. Income stocks, and these are probably only about 15. Let me see. 14%. Yeah. But they pay dividends. And then I have top silver, top gold. The top silver is up 26%, the top gold 27%. And then I have top developers and exploration, and those are up 27%.
And aside from the Mormons, are there other stocks that you're liking? Or on the flip side, would you care to share things that you're disliking or think that the market's not going to favor?
I've been doing this for a long time and I'm a buy and hold guy. And so I believe that entry is very important. And so I always buy to the bottom. I don't buy to the top. And now it's too late. I think, so we had two opportunities to buy to the bottom. Now, what does buy to the bottom mean? It basically means when you have a big sell-off, and I call the buy zone is when the HUI gets below 225. So when you get a big sell-off and the HUI gets below 225, at that point, you look at these stocks that are basically trading downward, if you will. A good example is like when Endeavor dropped below $2. So Endeavor Silver dropped below $2, you basically start going, well, wow, this thing's a great entry. But at that point, what you do is you buy it to the bottom. So you basically buy like at 190 and then you buy again at 180, 170, 160. You buy to the bottom. You don't buy to the top. And then you get the bottom. You literally buy the bottom. So a good example again would be Newmont. Newmont, when it got to 35, it was like, okay, this is great entry. So I'm just going to buy it to the bottom. Now, what you do is you make a buy at 35 and then you wait until it goes lower and you buy again. So you buy again at 32, again at 30, and then the bottom was 29. So you literally get the opportunity to buy to the bottom. Buying to the bottom works. In other words, because if it goes up, you're not going to buy. You're only buying lower. That's the way I look at it. I'm not buying higher. I'm only buying lower. That's what buy to the bottom means. So there's been two great opportunities, October and then I think December, January. We had the HUI go below 200 twice. And it was just fantastic opportunities to buy stocks to the bottom. Now, and people hate to buy to the bottom because it's difficult to do because you think these stocks are just going to keep going down, down, down. And you don't know how low they're going to go. You have to have confidence that they're going to bounce off that bottom. And for me, I mean, buying, you know, I'm a long-term guy. So, you know, buying, you know, Endeavor Silver below $2, I'm just super confident it's going to bounce above that. I'm kind of risk averse. I have no problem doing that. But what's happening now is people are buying to the top. So I'm not buying at all. I actually tweeted that once the HUI got above 250, I'm out. I'm not buying anymore. So my buy zone is sub 225. But as that dip, as that correction goes down, when you get back above 225 to 250, that's kind of a zone that I still will take advantage of. There's still going to be some cheap stocks in that zone. But once above 250, I'm like, I'm out. I'm not buying. So I'm on the sideline right now. I'm on the sideline and now people are in there buying. They're buying to the top, if you will. But there are still opportunities. I mean, you're not buying the bottom, of course, but you're still buying these stocks that are really cheap. Like I did an article on Seeking Alpha. It posted yesterday on Jaguar Mining. And that's another one. I mean, there's a lot of companies like that. But if you look at Jaguar's chart, you know, it's up 25, 30% off the bottom. And you're basically going, you know, I missed the bottom. Yes, you missed the bottom because you didn't buy to the bottom. But it's still a very solid five bagger at $3,000 gold. And that's why I wrote the article. So there are still a lot of 5 and 10 baggers out there. You know, you're not going to catch the bottom per se, but you still have a ton of opportunity here. The train really hasn't left the station. I think that it's really interesting. I actually thought that you wanted to get in before silver got to 28. It's kind of been my mantra for the last couple of years. And here we are, silver's at 28. So this is really the time to get in. If you don't get in below 28, then you're going to miss a lot of stocks. As a matter of fact, you kind of already have. I mean, if you look at the Mormons, you kind of missed. I mean, look at Hecla over $5. You know, you kind of blink. And now, if you don't buy Hecla now, you blink and it'll be, you know, $8. So, you missed a really big move. And so, you know, this is kind of the last kind of opportunity for some kind of decent entries because, you know, like I said, once those four boxes all get checked off and we're going downhill, you know, once silver gets to 33, 34, 35, you're really going to be starting to chase these things. You know, you're not going to get these great entry prices.
Of the stocks that you have as buy and hold, what are some of your favorite fundamental stories? Like fundamentally, what are some of your, maybe Jaguar Mining might be one of them.
There's a ton of them. So I actually have a favorites list in my newsletter, and it's about 42 names, I think. So right now, and those are the ones that have the fantastic fundamentals. Now, those things are rated anywhere from 3-bagger to 20-bagger. I mean, I don't have anything below 3-bagger. I don't have very many. And the only reason why I would own a 3-bagger is because I think it's going to be a growth stock. And, it, you know, I just really like, you know, kind of the fundamentals of where it's heading 3 to 5 years down the road. So I will own a few of those. And some people will think that my top 25 or even my top picks are the way to go, especially some people think that I think I like the top 25 the best. No, I don't. The top 25 just means that it has 5-bagger potential with a good risk reward. That's all that means. My favorites is actually, I think, a better list as far as fundamentals.
You want to give one as an example? Just in terms of, even if you don't want to say a name, if you want to say a fundamental story that you like just to share with investors.
I'm glad you're kind of asking this question and kind of pinning me down, because I think it leads to this answer. And I always tell people, do not try to pick winners. I've been trying to tell people over and over again that you can't pick winners in gold and silver mining stocks, because there's too many factors that are unknown. And it's just, every company has its own idiosyncrasies, and you can just assume that it's going to do great. A perfect example would be like, I'll just throw Agnico Eagle out there, right? Is basically a company everybody thinks, oh, this thing's going to do great forever. You know, it's got good cost, good free cash flow. You know, it's fabulous. Well, they have 3 large mines. If they have a problem at one of those mines, the stock will go down, who knows, 20% in a day. So you just don't know. SSR Mining, which was a quality mid-tier producer, they had an accident at Koppler in Turkey. Their stock went down 50% in a day. 50. So you can't pick winners. Don't try to pick winners. Just try to pick potential winners. So when you're trying to pin me down on a single name, that's why I'm pushing back, because I'm going, you're trying to meet, you basically what you're saying is, Don, give me a winner. No.
Not even necessarily a winner. Although I really appreciate that answer, because I think there's a lot to learn from that answer. But I feel like more is what I was asking is like an example of how you do use fundamentals, or I guess your answer may be, I don't really use fundamentals.
Perfect. So when I talk about this in Jaguar, I'm basically saying, look, this is another potential winner. I'm adding it to my portfolio. Mm-hmm. Not saying, oh, this is a, you know, I'm going to make money on Jaguar.
Because your focus is more on the general picture of where gold and silver are and entry points accordingly.
No, my focus is being pragmatic and recognizing that you don't know which of your stocks are going to do well and which ones aren't. You can't know. And so I can, you know, all you can do is hope they're going to do well, and maybe they will, but there's no guarantees in any mining stocks. They're all speculative. So let's go back to Jaguar. So Jaguar, I've owned it, but I really didn't like it that much. And the reason why is because management has been poor, if you will. They first, they went bankrupt, I don't know how many years ago. It's been over 5, I believe. And they had like $250 million plus in debt. And they basically wiped it all out and gave the company, they gave all of the company to the bondholder, but they kept the company alive. They didn't kill it. That's why Jaguar is still there. It didn't get a new name or whatever, but they cleared the debt off the books, if you will. And then they kept everything going, but then they brought in a new management team, a CEO who was very conservative, and basically he was going to take his time to kind of rebuild this thing. And I didn't really like that approach because it was very conservative. I'm more of an aggressive guy. And so he basically, you know, cut the production way, way back. I forget how low they actually got. I think at one time it was sub 50,000 ounces a year. And their costs were not low because their grade wasn't fantastic. It was underground mining below 4 grams. But they had, and they had a large property, over, I think, 80,000 acres or something, like three different areas to drill, a ton of targets. And they still had a ton of potential, if you will. They had like two mines that were both at 50% capacity of the mill. So it easy to ramp them up. Plus they had another two mines in care and maintenance. They just had a ton of stuff going for them. So I wanted to own the stock just in case, you know, maybe it would turn a corner. But every year, you know, I analyze these stocks every year. Every year I'd look at it and it was like nothing burger. I just wasn't excited, you know. You know, I'm just waiting. And then it took them a long time, 5 years at least. What they did was they steadily were drilling because they had all these targets on the property, but they weren't spending a lot of money on drilling, but they were trying to find, you know, good areas to mine. And it took them a while, but they finally got lucky. And now they're adding gold at a really good grade. So their resources in 2023 went up 30%, which is a big move. The resources increased to 3.3 million ounces. And this is a mining company with a $150 million market cap in a good country in Brazil. And their costs are high, but they're only producing 80,000 ounces, which is kind of nothing for how many ounces they have in the ground. And so investors are looking back and they don't like the company. They don't like the management team. You know, they don't like, you know, there hasn't been any growth. It's like, you know, what is there to like, right? But, you know, Eric Sprott, he's like me. He's like, wait a minute, this company has a lot of potential if they can, you know, find more gold, expand production. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, your fundamentals. Find more gold, expand production, because all that gold that you find and expand, it's worth about $250 an ounce, maybe more. So Sprott, he owns over 50% of the company, which is mind blowing. I mean, it's the only company only mid-tier producer that he owns, that he owns that much. And he was visionary. He basically saw the potential. And so, but the key here, the fundamental key here is that number one, they have this excess capacity at these two mills. And number two, they're basically, it doesn't cost a lot of money ramping those up, adding, you know, basically finding new ore and just adding it to the mill, which is what they're going to do. So they're going to double production to 150,000 ounces. So you get expanded production and they're going to lower cost. And so the fundamentals are just great. I mean, I tweeted out, I did the analysis. This is the first time I looked at this company, was excited, and I don't know, 5+ years. I tweeted out, I said, this is a thing of beauty. And fundamentally it is. It's a thing of beauty because it's going to be really hard for them to screw this up because they don't have any debt and they don't have a lot of cash either. I think they only have like 20 million in cash, but that's okay. They don't need cash. They're going to add cash and they have high cost, but their costs are going to come down. So as long as gold stays above $2,000, they're golden. They're in great shape. And Eric Sprott, I mean, you know, he owns half the company, which is about $75 million. And that $75 million is going to turn into, you know, probably $500 million. So, you know, it's a beautiful fundamental story. So that's what you look for.
I appreciate that. If I may, like, given the fact that you're talking about a pragmatic approach to, you know, not being able to bet on a winner, but to do your best in terms of trying to see what is going to be a valuable or successful company, would you say hedging is particularly important when you're talking about this space and the miners and gold and silver?
No, I don't, because we're speculating. And if you're hedging in miners, then you probably shouldn't be in them because you don't have any belief. I've hedged a few times and, you know, by and large, I'm basically net loss on hedging. I just puts a bad taste in my mouth now going forward. It's like, for me, it's just not worth it. Just focus on the upside. Now, I want to say one thing about Eric Sprott. He does like to pick winners. However, I mean, him pressing, he calls it pressing his bet. I mean, betting, you know, $75 million on one company is definitely trying to pick a winner. I don't do that. But what he does do is he does use he does own a lot of stocks. He's one of the few investors out there that, like me, who likes to own a ton of positions. But he does it to press his bets, where I do it to just to, my strategy is to have low allocation, so I lower my risk, my diversification. So I hedge through low allocations. The people that are hedging are trying to make money this year. I don't think that's how you should invest in gold and silver mining stocks. I don't think you should care about the next 12 months. You should care about the next 24, 36, 48 months. Trying to focus on making money in miners over the next 12 months is, I don't know, I think it's kind of a fool's game. Just because when you're going after big alpha, it just doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. You got to be patient. And I think Eric would agree with me on that. I mean, a lot of his plays are drill stories that are going to take a long time to play out. So you got to be patient in this. And you have to be a believer. You got to believe that gold and silver prices are going up a lot. You can't believe, great, silver's going to $35. I'm going to get in here and make, 50% this year. A lot of people invest that way. Like, oh yeah, silver's going to go to 35. Silver's going to go to 2,700. I'm going to make 35%, 50% on my money, in the near term. It's amazing how many people invest that way. The majority of them do. And then they take, I'm up 100, I'm up 50%. I'm going to take 25% of profits. Again, annualized, that's their mindset, annualized returns. And I just think, learn, if you want to annualize returns, I mean, learn how to trade, basically. You need to be a good trader to have annualized returns. I mean, most investors, like 401k plans, they just have an index and they're basically hold it for 20 years, and then they get their annualized returns that way. But very slowly, very small ones, right? Average 10% over 20 years kind of thing. I don't like to invest that way. I want to get 300 to 500%, but over, when it happens, I'll be very patient. I'll wait for it because I believe that, let me bring this in. I actually think the only reason to own gold and silver mining stocks is because you believe that the U.S. economy and the U.S. government and the Treasury are basically behind the eight ball and they're going to get into deep trouble. To be blunt here, to believe that the U.S. government is going to default on its debt, then gold and silver miners and stacking silver and gold make perfect sense.
Anything you want to say about ETFs at this point and how you're thinking about things?
Yeah, I love ETFs. I have six of them. I think ETFs make a lot of sense for diversification. As far as physical silver, I think you have to be careful with with SLV. I just don't trust it. But I think PSLV, the Sprott Silver Trust, I think that one's fine. I think the CEF in Canada, Central Fund of Canada, they have half silver, half gold. I think that one. So those are the two physical ones I like. It's P as in Paul, PSLV, and then the CEF. Charlie Echo Yankee, or Frank, excuse me. Those two I think are good for physical. And then for the miners, there's only two silver miner ETFs, which I own both. One is SIL, which is better quality silver miners. And then the other one is SILJ, which has a lot of the juniors. If you want a full exposure to the silver miners, I think SILJ gives it to you. SILJ should outperform SIL, but I like them both a lot. And then the gold miner ETFs, there's a lot of them. There's probably six or seven of the silver miner ETFs out there. Sprott has one. There's several of them. Trade in New York. I think there's one out of England, but there's a bunch of those. I think GDXJ is one that I like a lot. Somebody else said there's one called Ring that they think is better than GDXJ. And there's one GOAU that people like a lot. There's a lot of gold miner ETFs But I like all the ETFs because I think they provide excellent diversification, because ETFs aren't going to go bankrupt. I mean, yeah, it's possible they could, you know, get hit, you know, they could have a problem, but they're not going bankrupt, which I think that is a very good diversification methodology. Plus ETFs, you can invest more than a low allocation. I have no problem putting 5% in an ETF because I don't think the risk is, you know, that substantial. So it gives you a way to diversify your portfolio and put a big allocation in an ETF.
And that's something that you put and kind of don't look at for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I have 6 ETFs and I think they work great for, I don't look at them. I think they're long-term. Those are the last thing you sell.
Don, another great conversation. I appreciate it. And to remind listeners, your investing group on Seeking Alpha is called Gold and Silver Mining Ideas. Anything else you want to share with investors, either about the investing group or just in general about the space?
I think it covered it all. There's nothing really that pops out of my mind other than to say that expect a lot of volatility this year. I think this is going to be a crazy year. I think that people that are buying right now are going to they're going to get tested by the bull. I don't think that you get in now and you're buying and you think that, you know, everything's just going to go straight up. I don't think it's going to be an easy year to be buying miners. And from here forward, if you will, I'm expecting a lot of volatility. But I think that next year, 2025, I think is going to be the best year ever for gold and the miners.
Any articles discussed today, you can find links to them on our show notes. And all episodes have transcripts available on Seeking Alpha. And for those wanting to follow breaking news and general news coverage of the markets, come listen with us at Wall Street Breakfast. We have morning episodes released before 7 a.m. Eastern and afternoon episodes released around 12 noon Eastern. We've got Wall Street Breakfast and Wall Street Lunch for all your market news needs.
Just a reminder, anything you hear on this podcast should not be considered investment advice. This is for entertainment purposes only, and you should seek advice from a licensed professional before investing. If you enjoyed the episode, leave a rating or review on your favorite podcasting app, and we'll see you soon with a new episode.